Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us on the line former Congressman John Laboutier, one of my favorite guests. We had him on this morning, and because we had a cancellation this afternoon, he was kind enough to come on with us to talk about the threat of Stinger missile attacks on American commercial airliners. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always my pleasure, and it's double pleasure to be on with you twice in the same day.
Well, it's really my pleasure as well. And you, of course, written an article on Newsmax about this threat. So why don't you describe what it is that you're concerned about and what needs to be done?
Okay. Well, what made me write this thing, and I'll recount it for your listeners, is that after the Spanish bombings in Madrid 2 weeks ago, I saw an interview with a friend of mine on TV, Arno de Borgrave, a longtime famous journalist and war correspondent, who said he believes the next attack that happens here in the United States is going to be Al-Qaeda shooting down three of our commercial airliners with Stinger missiles. And he went on to say, if that happens, it will cripple our economy and maybe the world economy.
Now, why does he think that, and why does he think there are going to be three of them? Does he have any inside information? Because Arno de Borgrave is certainly a commentator. Whenever I see an article by him, I read it.
Me too, and that's why I paid attention to it. I don't know why he came up with three. I can suspect part of the reason for three is that Al-Qaeda, usually their modus operandi, as we saw in Spain and on 9/11, is multiple targets simultaneously. It causes more havoc, and it increases your odds of a successful attack, so that if one or two fails, you still get one or two or three targets successfully hit.
Well, of course, the incredible thing about this is we know how to prevent this. We know how to block those Stinger missiles coming up. Israel's had their protection on their commercial airlines for years, but we can't figure out how to do it. We're going to get around to it one of these days. Gee, it's going to cost too much money. We've got all the explanations for not doing what's logical to protect the passengers on American commercial airlines. And as you pointed out this morning, if there was such an attack, why, it would be the end of the American airline. Nobody's going to get on airlines after that. The airlines that, you know, that almost have to be nationalized. We just would not have an airline industry. The American people wouldn't go on the planes because they would be in fear. And yet there's no reason for this at all. But why don't you pick up the story from there?
Well, by the way, let's go down that line for a minute of what would happen economically. If this were to happen, and two, three, four, five U.S. airliners were shot down on the same day or within a couple days, who is going to get on an airplane? Nobody. That's going to immediately bankrupt all the airlines and related industries. The airplane manufacturers aren't going to be able to sell their planes. Hotels, rental cars, business travel, everything. It will ripple down the line in our economy. It'll be devastating. And then to get the thing fixed, which you and I are going to talk about, that there are protective devices that can be put on commercial jets, we'll then put them on, but you'll have to get the consumer, the flyer, willing to get back on a plane again.
Hold that thought.
That's going to take a while.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is John Laboutier. And, of course, John was a congressman. When he was in Congress, he was very concerned about the fate of the boys we left behind in Vietnam, and we've talked to him many times about that. He is still very concerned about that, and we'll have him on again here sometime. As he says, there are still boys over there. We know they're alive. They just don't want the American people to know that the government officials, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, know that we abandon those boys and to live out the rest of their lives in a sense of hopelessness, knowing that they were betrayed by the government that they served so faithfully. So, but right now, of course, John has raised this issue, and you'll find his article on Newsmax as to why we're not doing what needs to be done to protect our people on commercial airliners. And I have pointed out many times, if we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why haven't we sealed our borders? If we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why is the Bush administration still doing everything they can to block the arming of the pilots and some of the requirements they put on the pilots who can carry a gun are so ridiculous that most of them say, why bother? We have not really reinforced the doors. We do not have marshals on every plane. And one of the most glaring things is we have not done what the Israelis had done long ago for their planes to protect their passengers, and that is have the devices on those planes that would sense a Stinger missile coming and would, of course, have all sorts of means of diverting that away. So why don't you pick up the story there, John?
Okay, well, once we've explored, we know what would happen economically. You know, we didn't talk about this before, Stan, but there has always been a suspicion that TWA 800, which went down right near me here on Long Island on its way to Paris, it had just taken off from JFK Airport here in New York in July of 96. You know, about 290 eyewitnesses on the ground on the south shore of Long Island who didn't even know each other, independent from each other, all said they saw something that they thought looked like a missile go up and hit this plane. And we were told after a long investigation that that was phooey and that it was a very odd thing. There was an empty center fuel tank in the jet, and there was a short out of a wire in there and a spark, and that caused the plane to blow up. Which I don't believe for one second. I do not believe 747s, which have been flying for over 30 years. There's never been one that blew up spontaneously because of a spark in an empty fuel tank. But that's what the government told us.
Now, hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is John Boutelet. And we're talking about what happened to TWA 800, and that it's very obvious, if you've studied what happened there, that we've never gotten the truth, that this was not a spark in the central fuel tank. There were 290 people independently who saw the missiles rise, and some people say one, some people say two missiles rise from the surface and bring down TWA 800, and they've lied to us ever since then. I would simply quote a few, the book Bin Laden, A Man Declared War Against America, which we carry, written by the head of the conventional terrorism and unconventional warfare unit at the House of Representatives. His name is Joseph Badansky. He says that in Europe, everybody believes the Islamic terrorists took it down because they said they did, and they made the announcements in Europe totally blacked out in the American media. The book, The Man Who Declared War Against America, Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War Against America, the book is available from Radio Liberty. So certainly if they would somehow involved in the downing of TWA 800, why couldn't they be involved with the downing of other airplanes? Is that sort of your thought?
That's my point, and I think they would do one more thing, which they've done in Iraq. They've taken a couple of our helicopters down with Stinger missiles, those are the shoulder-launched missiles, and they've hit a DHL cargo jet when it was taking off from the Baghdad airport. But in each case, they had a video camera to video the attack, and then they somehow got the video to the Arab media, and we've seen it. I've seen the one in the helicopters in northern Iraq. I think what they might do here is if they want to, say, shoot down three of our jets, they'll have a handheld video and show it and get that video on the TV. And that will make it clear that it's not an accident, it's not a short out of an airplane gas tank, it's an attack. And that will absolutely do what we just talked about, paralyze our economy.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners the story of your friend Frankie, who a wise guy.
Frankie is a wise guy, mafia man, now doing serious long-term time in the federal penitentiary. He was a friend of my older brother, and he told me that years ago he did a business deal with the Russian mafia in Brighton Beach, New York. And he went over to this mobster's house, this Russian mobster's house, to get a handgun from him. And he goes in, and the guy says, great, come on in. And he takes him into the cellar, into this locked gun room. And they go in there, and Frankie was astounded at what was in this room, Stan. There were the usual array, of course, of rifles and pistols. But on the wall were mortars, Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, every kind of machine gun, hand grenades, RPGs, all of it. The room was filled with it, including those Stingers. Now, if they have them, I was told this 2 weeks ago. I went to Las Vegas, and there was a gun show going on there. And a friend of mine said, you know, we could go over to this gun show, and if we ask around and they're sure we're not out to get anybody like the feds would be, you can make arrangements to buy a Stinger there. And we didn't actually go.
I'm glad you didn't try to buy one.
And I wrote this up, you know, and I've gotten quite a few emails from people saying, oh, this is unfair, you're attacking the gun shows. And I'm not. I believe people have a right to have guns, and they have a right to have gun shows. I don't think we need to go to the point where people have a right to have a Stinger anti-aircraft missile. I really can't find any reason that an American needs one yet. We may eventually, but as of now, we don't need them. And we certainly don't need these radical fundamentalist Muslims getting their hands on them.
Well, now, what was this story about this woman who had actually bought a Stinger?
Well, she didn't buy it, but it was Janet. And we'll leave her last name out. She's a longtime reader of Newsmax. She reads my column and writes to me occasionally. And when she read this column we're talking about, the Stinger attacks that could come, she wrote me a fascinating email about a Cuban who offered a few years ago to sell her a Stinger for $700, and he showed it to her in the back seat of a car in a place called New Phoenix, Alabama, not far from Fort Benning, Georgia. And it turns out there was a store down there that trafficked in stolen weapons from the U.S. Army. And she did her best. She is an Army brat, Janet is. Her father was a longtime agent in the Army, a CID agent, Criminal Investigation Division. And they paid no attention to her. They didn't do a thing about it. And she remains to this day astounded that here she could have had a Stinger missile for $700. So we got the Russian mafia, we got people in the military selling them, we got them at gun shows. You can choose to believe what you want. The point is, out of all of it, it may be possible for the bad guys to get Stingers. And all we can do about that is arm the airplanes with anti-missile technology that is available. And that's what I wrote about, that in the New York Times last week, there was a big story saying the stuff is ready to go now, and we can equip our planes with this stuff. And you and I agree, Stan, it ought to be done yesterday.
It should have been done immediately after September 11th. We had the technology. We could have done it. We have it on our regular planes. The Israelis have it on their planes. But all shucks, we just can't get around to that because we're too involved with the war on terror. and there's something wrong with this story. I would simply point out that Rodney Sitch, who we'll be having on next week or so, used to work for the FAA, and he had actually sent notes, letters to every congressman and senator before September 11, saying that he knew that the Islamic terrorists had Stinger missiles that had left over from Afghanistan, that offered to turn them over to our government in return from somebody we had under arrest, and they wouldn't even consider that. And he's talking about hundreds of Stinger missiles, and many of which were here in this country. So I share your concern. I think it's a very real concern. And the only question I hope everybody in our listening audience will ask is, why aren't we doing what is logical when facing a threat of this magnitude? I don't think it's an imaginary threat. I think it's very real. And I will tell you, if Arno de Borgrave is writing about this, he's a member of the CFR, he's former editor of the Washington Times, but I think he's a good man. I have the greatest respect for him. And when he is concerned, I think everybody in the listening audience should be concerned. So how are we going to get pressure brought to bear so that they're going to do what's logical? And instead of simply wringing our hands and saying, oh, gee, well, maybe next year or the year after that, because there may not be an opportunity later to do that to save American lives.
Well, that's true. You know, I'd like to bring up the name of Richard Clark for a minute.
Okay, go ahead.
In his hearings, his testimony at the 9/11 Commission 2 weeks ago, he said that it takes body bags before the American government wakes up to something. And I would like to think we could get these planes equipped before they're shot down. Certainly, if any of them get shot down and it's known that it's terrorism, unlike TWA 800, where they hid that fact, once there is a terrorist attack, Bush and the Congress will equip the planes immediately. What you and I want to do is stop it before it happens.
And, of course, the financial catastrophe that would result from this, we saw what happened after 9/11.
Now, on the Stingers from Afghanistan, in Richard Clark's book, he makes a point that those Stingers, which are now, we gave them to the Mujahideen in the mid to late 1980s. He said those particular Stingers are not the ones that are being used today by the bad guys, for instance, in Iraq, because the batteries wear out. But somehow, clearly, they've been getting new Stingers. And clearly the Russian mafia got them. And clearly the Cuban out of Fort Benning, he got them. So they're gettable. And I just think that we are on the verge of a disaster that could be prevented. And isn't that a shame?
Well, the wonderful thing is we do have the Internet. We can circumvent the controlled media, and people can go up to Newsmax.com and see John Leboutier's article on the very real threat that does exist to our commercial airliners. And of course, those of you who listen to my program regularly will realize that a year ago I was talking about that, the fact that we're, until about 6 months ago, we weren't even bothering to check the baggage going onto both commercial and cargo jets to see if there were any explosives in them. If we were really involved with the war on terrorism, how could you be that dumb? And I don't think the people in Washington, D.C. are that dumb at all. I think they know something we don't know. But I fear that this thing can get out of hand, as it has in the past.
So, by the way, since we talked about this earlier, I've gotten an email from a guy who's a pilot of some sort who said that he's not so sure the technology would work as well as we hear it'll work. He said, especially in airports where you got all this radar going on and the jamming equipment that you use to jam the guidance system on the Stinger may not work at the airport so well because of the radar at the airport that's necessary to guide the planes in. Now, I know nothing about any of that. I just wrote him back, though, saying, look, all the military jets and planes have this technology, and they have their own airfields. Now, if it works for them at their airfields, why wouldn't it work at San Francisco Airport or LaGuardia? It has to be a way that we can get this stuff to work.
And the other thing is, it works for the Israelis. It just won't work for us. Of course, we were able to build an anti-ballistic missile defense system in the early 1970s, but shucks, we just can't figure out how to build one now that'll work.
Right.
How could we have just got so much less smart in the last 30 years? We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up our program with Congressman John Leboutier.
Help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, Inroad to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs, in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. 9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me just mention that we carry the Phenopoly. Phenopoly is a game that's designed to help you and your children and your grandchildren learn how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. And, of course, this is how the mind was trained to work. You're supposed to sound words out, and that's how you can read them and pronounce them and spell them. But there's been a program in American education for years to dumb down our children, and that's why the American scores are so poor in relationship to other countries. This didn't happen accidentally. The minds and hearts and souls of our children have been under attack. And if you think the new federal program is going to solve the problem, you're mistaken. They're not stressing phonics. They're stressing programs will change the attitudes and values and beliefs of your children and turn them against God and country. Well, if you'd like to get Phenopoly, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. $139.95, the best money you'll ever spend. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon, John Leboutier, and somebody had called in and wanted to know if you had any thoughts about the alert that's been put out for trains this summer and that relationship to making the planes safer.
Well, I am absolutely scared to death of that also after Madrid, and I go to Pennsylvania Station here in New York City, Stan, a couple times a week. I was there yesterday by train. And I think it's probably more of a target than the train stations, the two that they hit in Madrid, because in this one area underneath Madison Square Garden, you have the Long Island Railroad, which carries 100,000 people a day or something, the PATH trains from New Jersey, the Metroliner that goes to Boston and Washington and Philadelphia, the New York City subway system, and another local set of trains that go to upstate and New Jersey, all in and out of there all day long. They could easily put bombs on six different systems of trains that would then fan out from Penn Station and go off, and just it would be devastating. By the way, there's one other thing they could do that's the simplest of all, is do in America what they do in Jerusalem. Only, what if they had four suicide bombers go off in major shopping malls, like the one in Minneapolis, one, say, in New York, one in Miami, and one in St. Louis or something. Boom, 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 boom. They did them all. Who would go to a mall? You'd all be afraid that the mall is getting blown up. Well, and that would paralyze the economy.
But you know, the thing that really bothers me, John, is why haven't they already done this? If we have all these terrorists here, and certainly they, we know in the past that they had explosives, that they were having their meetings, they were being trained in bomb making. Anybody who doesn't believe that needs to see this video, American Jihad. But it was suppressed by the government back in 1994, and it was all about that CIA and FBI film footage there showing this radical Islamic movement. Why was the government suppressing it, and why haven't these things happened so far here in America?
Well, I don't know why they haven't happened, and thank God they haven't. We've had an unbelievable attack, and I think the history of the attacks by al-Qaeda is they do an attack like the World Trade Center in 1993. Now, that was a car bomb in a van parked in the parking garage under the World Trade Center. And it went off, it did kill a few people, but it didn't bring the building down. So they then worked for 8 years to come up with a plan to achieve the original goal, which is to bring down the World Trade Center. They did it. They also hit the Pentagon, but I don't think they got the picture they really want. And the picture they really want is the White House and the Congress, the symbols of this country, the symbols of the West, in rubble. And I think that's their ultimate goal. And it's probably nuclear rubble. And they're probably working on that, or maybe they're ready to do that, or maybe they're waiting for the election. I don't know. But we have to be ready. I think the other thing we ought to do is why did we send 180,000 of our wonderful troops into Iraq and do everything we could to get Saddam? Why didn't we do that level of effort in Afghanistan and Pakistan to get Osama bin Laden right after 9/11 and keep at it till we get him?
And that's exactly the question that Dick Clark asked, and of course you know what's happened to him. He's been demonized by the right and the left, by the conservatives, by the liberals. Boy, they've really gone out to get Dick Clark, because he asked basically that same question. Yeah. Why didn't we finish the war on terror? Why did we forget about Osama bin Laden and the terrorists and go after the Iraq? Was there another agenda there? And he, of course, suggests there was. But anyway, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. Do you have any sort of parting thoughts for us today? Because I promised John that I'd let him go at the half hour, even though I hate to. Go ahead.
No, I have nothing much more at the moment, Stan, but I've loved being with you all day today. And I think what next thing we need to do on this issue is figure out how to juice up the government and get them off their rear ends and try to arm our planes with the devices very quickly.
And I agree with you totally. I think that what people can do is write to your congressman, send, well, don't write to them because they're afraid to open their letters.
No, let me tell you something. This is a big mistake people make. Congressmen pay a lot of attention to the mail.
How about emails, though, and faxes?
Oh, yeah, same thing. Okay. Phone call, whatever it is, when they hear directly from voters, and they hear a lot from them, then they say, I got to pay attention to that.
Because you know, because you were a congressman.
That's right. Okay. When I was in there, we got more mail on the breakup of AT&T than any other subject. It was huge. And believe me, these guys want to get reelected. They pay attention.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so much, John. I appreciate you being with us, and I'll look forward to our next time together.
Same. Thank you, Stan. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we want to talk to you about the Berkey water filters. And really, this is a wonderful thing to have. You have that sort of feeling of safety. If there was ever a problem with the water supply, you could always get pool water, or you could get pond water or lake water or river water, and you can run it through there, and it's potable. Certainly, the Big Berkey, which is the traditional filter, has been used by missionaries for 150 years, and you put a couple of gallons in the top, and it goes to the ceramic filters packed with activated carbon, comes out the bottom, and the water tastes great, and of course it's removed almost all of the bacteria and the herbicides and pesticides and all of those bad things that you don't want to be drinking. The Big Berkey, well, I hate to tell you this, but it's gone up to $2.79 because of the devaluation of the American dollar. It was $2.39. It's now $2.79. But it's a great product. It's available in every state but California and Iowa. However, the Berkey Light is available here, and the price has not gone up. It's $199. And, of course, if you buy either the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light, why, you get a video or a four-tape set we produced. The Berkey Light is made of Lexan, which is what you make bulletproof glass out of, so you can drop this and you're not going to have it shatter, and you can actually see the water level, which is a real advantage. The filters are what we call the black Berkey filters, and they really purify. I mean, they're just no bacteria. They get through there, and it takes out even MTBE. It does a great job of cleaning up the water. Neither filter will take out fluoride and arsenic. And so if you want to get rid of those, or you need to get the post filters, you can put on the bottom, but you can get them for both units. They're available. You can see them on our website at RadioLiberty.com, but call us at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're going to have open lines this next half hour. And so, since we have nothing prepared, and you'd like to call in, give us a call. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And, of course, the first half hour, we talk with Congressman or former Congressman John Leboutier, who's really one of my favorite guests. He's right on most issues. I don't think he understands the conspiracy that I talk about, but he's a patriot. He loves America, and he writes for Newsmax and gets a lot of great information up on his website. It's at newsmax.com. And I really believe that there is a very real threat to our commercial airliners. But the problem is, why haven't we had more acts of terrorism here in the United States since the 9/11 attack? Now, there were attacks on our trains before that by terrorists. And this is covered in Craig Roberts' excellent book, The Medusa File. He was working for the police force. He was called in on some of these terrorist attacks on the trains, where trains were actively derailed. But everything was done to play down the terrorist threat in America prior to 9/11. I mean, there is no question that there was a tie-in between what happened in Oklahoma City in 1995 and the Islamic terrorists, because Terry Nichols was taking trips over to the Philippines and meeting with representatives of Al-Qaeda over there, and Ramzi Yousef, and a man named Murad, and a man named Sheikh Khalid Muhammad, who was, of course, the man who planned 9/11 and was Osama bin Laden's right-hand man, and our government knew all of that about that, but they've totally suppressed that from the American people. And you notice now that Terry Nichols is on trial again. Why are they not bringing that out? They're talking about something entirely different to confuse you. That's what they do all the time so effectively. And they're talking about, oh, the threat of these right-wing militia groups, that they were the ones who were really involved with Timothy McVeigh. And it really wasn't Terry Nichols at all. Terry Nichols was simply used by Timothy McVeigh. He shifted the blame to him because they didn't want you to know about these right-wing militia groups who were really behind the bombing. Or maybe it was the group at Elohim City. And, of course, if you go into the background of Elohim City, why, you'll find that the Reverend Millar, who was in charge of that, he was in charge of the Christian Identity Movement group, little cell, little city that they had there. You remember the Christian Identity Movement. They were the real threat that we were told before the millennium, the coming of 2000, that there was going to be terrorist activity, and it was the Christian groups like Christian Identity. Well, here's a Christian Identity group. Reverend Millar was an FBI informant. Strassmeyer was there, Andreas Strassmeyer, and there's a great deal of evidence to suggest that he was working for the CIA. There was Carol Howe there. She was working for the BATF, and there were other people there that were working for other intelligence agencies. And when the BATF wanted to raid Elohim City, why, the Justice Department intervened and told them they couldn't raid Elohim City, even though they knew that they were planning on it blowing up the building, the Murrah building in Oklahoma City. So a lot of this is planned confusion. What you do is you create a whole flock of rabbit trails, and you don't know which one to follow. When you follow any one of them, you get further away from the truth. And this is how the game is played. And that's, of course, what's happening as far as the trial of Terry Nichols. That's what happened as far as the trial of Timothy McVeigh. What you have never been told is what you'll find in the book Others Unknown, the Oklahoma City Bombing Conspiracy, written by Stephen Jones, who was the defense attorney for Timothy McVeigh, who opened his trial in Denver by saying that Timothy McVeigh had written to his sister and saying, "I am part of a secret special forces unit involved in illegal activity." That was the opening statements there at the trial. Can you believe it, that nobody in the media ever picked that up, and the prosecution never mentioned that? Well, right now, of course, let's get to Nathan, who's calling in. But the point I was trying to make was that there were terrorists involved with attacks on our trains, and that's covered in Craig Roberts' book, The Medusa File. And if you haven't read it, you need to get it. Available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. If there's one book you're going to read, besides maybe my book, and maybe even better than my book, is The Medusa File by Craig Roberts. And then, of course, the terrorists were involved with the downing of TW-800. They were involved with the Oklahoma City bombing, and your government deceived you, and the media went right along with it, because the last thing they wanted the American people to know was the terrorist threat. And yet, since 9/11, there have been no more terrorist attacks in the United States. And the question is why, and well, if we have time, maybe we'll cover that. But right now, let's go to Mary, who's calling from New York. She can't stay long, so I'm going to ask Nathan to call us. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I told some kids that the reason they showed the planes hitting the towers was so that you would think that they took them down when in actuality it was the explosives. But they said, where did I get that information? And I referred them to you guys.
All right. Well, basically, I've never said that there were explosives in the building. I don't know why the first two buildings came down, but I'm very suspicious that Building 6 and Building 7 had to have something take them down. There has never been an incident in all the history of the United States when there's been a fire in a building where it's collapsed the way that Building 6 and Building 7 did.
Yeah, it looked like a really good demolition job.
It sure did, didn't it? Yeah.
That was my first impression, and then after they sense, you know, then it made no sense, but then it did make sense why they would show the planes hitting, because they wanted us to think that.
All right, fine. Anything else you want to say?
Yes, I wanted to ask you, I was telling people about the reason that the Pentagon, well, as the planes were coming in, the plane was coming in towards the Pentagon, I was telling someone about this today, and he didn't believe that they could have stopped him. He said, yeah, the only way they could have stopped him was shooting him down. Is that correct?
That's right.
But what was the reason they wouldn't shoot them down then?
Well, that's the question. Why didn't they? And do you take my newsletter?
Yes, I do.
All right. Well, then you remember in the February newsletter and again in the March newsletter, I simply quote from Norman Mineta's testimony. He's the Secretary of Transportation to the 911 Commission in May of last year, where he described what happened when he was down in the bunker beneath the White House on the morning of 9/11. And there's Dick Cheney. And the aide comes into the room and says, the plane is 50 miles out. And, of course, Minette has mentioned that this is the plane coming in to get the Pentagon.
Right.
And nothing happens. And then the aide comes in and says the plane is 30 miles out. And then he comes in a little later and he says the plane is 10 miles out. Do the orders still hold? And the vice president whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still hold. Have you heard anything to the contrary? And I'll tell you right then, the commission got off that subject because the last thing they want you to know is, what were those orders?
Yeah.
But you can get that, of course, it's in my my newsletter, and you can get the source where you can pick that up off the internet.
And one more quick one. Did you hear the story that they actually did shoot the fourth plane down, but they led us to believe that there was no such thing, that they actually brought it down within the plane, which is true on that one?
I believe that we did bring that plane down. There's no way that that plane crashed into the ground and one of the engines bounced away 2 miles, and that some of the debris was found 8 miles away. How could that possibly be if the plane crashed into the ground?
Yeah.
And everything burned. Not only that, but one of the hijackers' passports fluttered gently to the ground. Everything else was incinerated, but one of the passports survived. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it does sound like the whole thing was for sympathy.
But you see, they can do whatever they want to because they control the media, so they control what the American people think. Thank goodness for alternative radio.
Thank goodness for the internet.
Hey, thanks very much for calling.
Yes, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, bye.
Okay, we got Nathan calling from Contra Costa. Thanks for hanging on, Nathan. We had to get to Mary, though she couldn't stay with us long.
4:45 on a beautiful Friday afternoon. How could I protest?
All right, fine.
Listen, I've never really said this over the air before, and I just want you to, this is my take on the terrorism thing as far as the destabilization of sovereign nations, particularly sovereign nations like Israel and America, that, you know, are very autarkic and very much don't let the rest of the world tell them what to do. My sense of it, and this is an opinion, a perspective, people are free to disagree with it, I don't have real solid facts to back it up, but if you study H.G. Wells and the writings of The Shape of Things to Come, The New World Order, and these various books that he wrote, you find that there's some type of a threat, okay? And I'm not saying that I don't believe that terrorism is a real threat. I know you've had guests on here who have said that. I demur from that. But, you know, I believe that it's real. I think these people are really out there. But I also believe that there's an agenda beyond it, that I believe that it is the threat that can be used to create the New World Order. In other words, if you read H.G. Wells, you find that he spells out the concept that there would be kidnapping someday. There would be lots of kidnappings and people would be fearful. He spells out that there would be nationalist threats. I think he even mentions Yugoslavia, if I'm not mistaken. A whole lot of what's in the news right now was spelled out by globalists. He was something of a socialist, but he wasn't a Marxist because Marxism was too democratic. I'll buy it. Lenin he liked because Lenin, he believed, took from his ideas of corporate socialism or right-wing socialism, and that's how he believed Bolshevik ideology was constructed, and not from Marx. who's more from the European revolutionary tradition.
Okay.
And if you read Lenin's writings, there is proof of that.
All right.
And there
fine.
Is a lot of proof that H.G. Wells was who he said he was, and I believe that although I think that I don't go for the whole 9-1-1 was not real conspiracy theory, I do believe that there is something beyond that.
I agree.
And thank you very much. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you so much, Nathan, and I agree with you totally. I believe that they are using this to impose the Patriot Act, which was written up and planned long beforehand. The Office of Homeland Security was planned. We know it was planned at least by January of the year 2001, because it is part three of the report of the National Commission on Security in the 21st Century. We do have those available. They're rather expensive because they're large government reports. You can pull them down off the internet. That's the National Commission on Security in the 21st Century. You can actually get references to this in my newsletters. But they laid out the plan for the Office of Homeland Security 8 to 9 months before the terrorist attack. See, how did they know about that? Well, that's another complete story. Right now, let's go to Eric, who's calling from Irvine. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Good to hear from you. Are you hearing, listening to us on the internet or shortwave?
On the internet.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, on a 5-second delay.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, I was wondering, I know you had watched Megiddo, and I purchased the DVD from you guys.
Right.
And, what I was wondering, and it's been kind of burning me for a little while, because I've watched it, you know, quite a few times with friends and whatnot, and the only thing that I can't verify from that particular DVD is the statement that they made about the French Revolution being an Illuminati takeover, and I can't find any materials on that.
All right.
I don't know, I mean... are there any books, any
yes.
magazines?
Yeah, there's the writings of Nesta Webster and her publications on secret societies. We could probably help you track those down. We have them here, but we have never actually carried them. Nesta Webster went into the background of the French Revolution, and the French Revolution did not occur spontaneously. The Jacobins were involved in that, and the Jacobins were the front for the Illuminists. The Illuminati went underground about 1785, and then they had their front organizations, who were the Jacobins, and they were the ones who precipitated the French Revolution. The writings of Nesta Webster, her book, The French Revolution, is probably the best source of information on that you can get.
Nesta Webster.
Nesta Webster, right.
How do you spell that?
N-E-S-T-A. Webster, W-E-B-S-T-E-R, Nesta Webster's writing.
Nesta.
Nesta
okay.
Webster. And,
okay.
And she was very, very popular maybe 60 years ago. Everybody heard of Nesta Webster, but of course her writings have been suppressed since then. A lot of the books have been burned. They've actually had to be republished to keep them in print, and the Birch Society used to carry the books. Whether they still do or not, I don't know.
Yeah, is she the same lady that created the Webster Dictionary?
No, that was Noah Webster.
Okay.
But it's a fascinating story to get into the background of how the French Revolution came about. And you go into, the book, a very good book we actually carry, is called Fire in the Minds of Men. It's written by James H. Billington, who's the Librarian of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And he will tell you that the French Revolution was tied into the Illuminati, and that all of the revolutions that occurred in Europe during the 18th and 19th centuries were tied into the occult. He says that, you know, there's a lot of information out there trying to make you believe that the French Revolution and these other revolutions have tied into the Enlightenment. And he said this really isn't so. It all ties into the occult. Fire in the Minds of Men, I think, is the book that you'll want to get, you'll want to read, because it will give you tremendous insight into the revolutionary movement that resulted in not only the French Revolution, but the revolutions that plagued France in the early 1800s, and then 1848, and the revolutions in Italy, and it culminated in the Russian Revolution and in the revolution in Cuba. And that's according to James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, former member of the editorial staff of Foreign Affairs magazine. Nobody will ever accuse him of being a right-winger, but a brilliant writer, a brilliant author.
Well, it's funny that nobody really knows about the Council on Foreign Relations. They never mention it in the mainline media. And a friend of mine who's, you know, he thinks he's pretty politically savvy, doesn't have any idea who these people are.
Well,
in fact, the matter is they're pretty much controlling our government right now.
Well, if you'd like, we have a wonderful article. It's written by Richard Harwood, who is the ombudsman for the Washington Post. It was written in October of 93. And if you give us a call, we'll be glad to send it to you. And
okay.
He's writing back in 1993 now, and he's saying, the Council on Foreign Relations is the closest thing America has to a ruling elite. He points it out at that time, the President of the United States came from the CFR, the Secretary of State came from the CFR, the Deputy Secretary of State, five Assistant Secretaries of State, the Legal Counsel for the State Department, the chairmans of or the most cabinet positions, the director of the federal the director of the CIA, as always, was his remark, and then of course the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, and then he told how they control the media. It's an amazing article. I've asked repeatedly the Washington Post for permission to copy that and use it in my publications. For some reason, they just won't give it to me. Now, you will read occasionally now that certainly Condoleezza Rice from the CFR. You'll see mention of the CFR on occasion in the publications today, mainline publications. But 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, they never mentioned it. But it is America's invisible government because it controls both political parties. But what everybody who's talked about it has missed is it is a front for Cecil Rhodes secret society. And that's, of course, what we learned from Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope. And the source and the exact pages are listed in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. But just between me and you, it's on pages 951 and 952 of Professor Quigley's book. Hey, we're out of time.
Okay.
Thanks so much for calling, Eric.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. If Eric is still out there on the line, wants to call us back again, why, we'll be glad to take his name and address and send him a copy of Richard Harwood's article. It's important that you have the documentation to show people when you're trying to convince them what's happening. And what you really would want to do would be to get some of the syllabuses we put together. Our sustainable development syllabus actually has Cecil Rhodes' Confession of Faith in it, where he talks about creating a secret society to take over control of the world. And we have that in several of our syllabuses. I think one of our best syllabuses is Iraq, The Untold Story, because that gives you the background for all of the wars of the last century and points out that they were all phony wars. There was no Gulf of Tonkin incident. We actually were lured into the Korean War by the State Department, which kept telling the North Koreans, if you attack South Korea, we won't respond. If you attack South Korea, we won't respond. And the North Koreans attacked South Korea. And, well, they found out just like Saddam Hussein did when he asked April Glaspie whether or not it was all right if he attacked Kuwait. And she told him, go ahead, do it. We don't care about it. And he did. And, of course, you know what happened after that. So you're not getting the truth through the regular media, and you will get a great deal of information you need to have at your fingertips. If you get Iraq, The Untold Story, the video, syllabus, and they're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Then if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get that. It comes by itself or with a video or with an audio tape, or you can get them all as the Brotherhood of Darkness special for $29.95. And you'll get everything I've learned in 40 years there condensed. Give us a call right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the end of the week. We get a couple of days off. This is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us. And Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and that's how we're able to be on the air 5 hours a day. That's how we're able to reach out to over 60 outlets every week as we gradually increase our listening audience. We have to buy radio time, but what a wonderful opportunity to reach people, to get them to understand what's really going on behind the scenes. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and join us in this epic struggle to determine if this nation or any nation conceived on godly principles can long endure, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to get a copy of our latest newsletter, we'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. Of course, I'll have to admit, we hope you're going to want to subscribe, or better still, join the Radio Liberty family, but we'll be glad to send you a free copy of my latest newsletter. It deals with why we are in Iraq. It will tell you what happened at the secret captain meetings that were held in January and February of the year 2001, 8 to 9 months before the 9/11 attack, simply quoting from the book of The Price of Loyalty by Paul O'Neill, who was the Secretary of Treasury, who attended those meetings. You'll be amazed at what you'll learn, and then, of course, you'll read of the testimony that was given on the 18th of September of the year 2002. And, of course, this was the testimony of Eleanor Hill, who was the director of the staff director for the Senate and House Select Intelligence Committee. Testimony that was totally blacked out by the media, telling you what the government knew about the plans to attack the United States. And they knew that they were going to attack the United States. They had all the evidence, and they kept saying, oh, no, we thought the attack was going to be overseas. And they knew the attack was going to be here. But we can't let the American people know that, because think of the implications. If you knew there was going to be an attack, and you knew it was going to be involve airplanes, why didn't you put members of the National Guard on every airplane till we could hire marshals? Why not try to head the attack off? Why not, of course, arm the pilots? They could have certainly told the pilots, you know, you should be carrying a weapon to defend yourself. And none of these things were done at that time. In fact, 9 of the hijackers were stopped at the airports on the morning of September 11th and not allowed to get on the plane. And within hours of the attack, the FBI, that had no idea that there was going to be an attack, was at the restaurants where the hijackers ate, at the that the schools where they were trained, at the neighborhoods where they lived. And that's in Kristen Breitweiser's testimony, which is available from Radio Liberty or up on the web. She's one of the Jersey girls. So you're not getting the truth through regular channels, and this is why we do what we do. And if you want a free copy of my latest newsletter that has Eleanor Hill's testimony, as well as what was discussed at the secret cabinet meetings, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because if what Paul O'Neill says is true, then every boy who dies in Iraq has been betrayed by the government that they went and thought they were fighting for. But then, after all, Henry Kissinger has said it so well. Our soldiers, our military personnel, are stupid, dumb animals to be used for a public policy. Our fighting men are stupid, dumb animals. You'll find that on page 194 of the book The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein. But you're not going to read about that, of course, in the New York Times. Or maybe a lot of our military people might be incensed to know what our leaders really think of them. Well, let's take America back, and you can help us. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and, of course, join us in this truly epic struggle for the souls and hearts of men. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders, our ministers. Please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, or Monday at the same time, may the Lord be with you.